Okay, Exodus, book of Exodus, part 3 today. Going to be in chapter 2.
It is.
There we go, that better? A little far away, I think. So, Exodus chapter 2, be in part 3, and I was looking. The nice thing about when you do class through a book like this, whatever you don't get done one week, you just start there the next week. So that's kind of the beauty of the timing there. You don't have to always come to a conclusion, but so the timing is definitely no big deal there. I was looking at the book of Exodus. There's 40 chapters, and we're part 3 here. We're in chapter 2, so if we do a chapter a week, we're looking at 40 weeks, so I think, well, this is going to be a year-long deal, probably, or more. So, but some of it might speed up, but maybe not. I hope it doesn't get boring. I enjoy the study of the history, and I've already, even just the little bit we've done, I've learned a few new things here already that I, you know, one of those things you maybe know, but don't really put it together until you start really looking at the history and understanding the history in comparison to the new covenant and the things that the events that play out. And also another thing that I always thought was boring is when you read the scriptures and it talks about the genealogies and this guy's from this guy and he's from this guy and you're thinking, what? Why do I need to know all this? What is the purpose of this? When you really start to see where God places people throughout the nation of Israel, and as far and also geologically, like where these groups of people are at and where they come from, we start to see a little bit different perspective maybe, and maybe a little bit, we get a little bit better look into God's, his master plan, as you might want to call it, and say, you know, these people over here that came through this genealogy over here, God really had a purpose with that, didn't he? Just like he does with everything. Things aren't done randomly, and sometimes it takes some deeper looking for us to really see that, and maybe, yeah, on the surface, it's not critical where we know, you know, the back six generations from each individual person and be able to memorize it, know it off the top of our head and stuff, but the intent of and the purpose of that scripture is definitely there, and I think it's interesting for me to see that at different times, I guess, so we'll get a little bit of that, into that today, but not too much, but just one example I wanted to pull out today. So we're going to look at the birth of Moses today. And Exodus chapter 2 is going to cover that. And we know up to this point, I won't back up too much, but Jacob comes to Israel, and then Joseph dies, and there's a new Pharaoh, or new king, and this new Pharaoh, he's not aware of the past, and he doesn't know, you know, these people, and the attitude towards them changes quite a bit, and he's trying to, you know, he's trying to minimize them, and he's like, well, there's going to be too many of these people, and we saw last week where he had had the plan to have the midwives to kill the baby boys, but that really didn't work, so then his next plan was to throw them in the river. So that brings us up to the birth of Moses, I guess. So if somebody would like to read Exodus 2, verse 1. We'll start with that, please. Okay, so we see, first here, we see his parents, Moses' parents. And that's not somebody we talk about all that much, I guess. And I wanted to just look at that a little bit. If we turn to Exodus, just chapter 6, just turn over a couple pages, 3-4 pages. Exodus 6, verse 20.
And Amram married his father's sister, Jochebed, and she bore him Aaron, Moses, and the length of Aram's life was 137 years.
Okay, so we see his father and his mother. A little unique situation there where a guy married his aunt. But you know, definitely life was different then than it is now. And also, if we turn to Numbers, we can kind of see it's just a confirmation of what we just read there. Numbers chapter 26, verse 59.
The name of Amram's wife was Jochebed, the daughter of Levi, who was born to Levi in Egypt, and she bore to Amram, Aaron, and Moses, and their sister Miriam.
Okay, so we see his parents, and then also his brother and sister are mentioned here, Aaron and his sister Miriam. And a couple thoughts I had with that is we know that with the baby girls, it wasn't as much of a concern, but where does Aaron fit into this? Because Aaron's his brother, right? Now, why wasn't he cast into the Nile? Or my thought was he was probably born early enough that before Pharaoh commanded that he was kind of, you know, he made it through, that slipped through the cracks, you could say, of the midwives, and so he was kind of grandfathered in, possibly. Just a thought, because he wasn't alongside Moses, or you know, he wasn't mentioned, I guess, with Moses being in hiding and whatnot. So if we move along now to Exodus chapter 2 verse 2, I guess I'd like to read that there. Okay, so this baby boy was born, and she hid him for 3 months. And I asked the question, why did she hide him? And we just talked about, if we just go back to Exodus 1, verse 22. Then Pharaoh commanded all the people, saying, every son who is born, you are cast into the Nile, every daughter you are to keep alive. So she hid him because, you know, he was going to be killed if she didn't do that. So she was able to hide him for 3 months. Now, if somebody would like to read 2 verses 3 through 6, Exodus 2, 3 through 6, we'll kind of see what happens next here.
When she could hide him no longer, she got in a brick basket and covered it over with a hard pitch, and she put the child into it and set it among the reeds by the bank of the Nile. The sisters put their assistance to find out what would happen to him. The daughter of Pharaoh came down to bathe at the Nile and her, with her maidens walking on the side of the Nile. She saw the basket among the reeds and sent her maid, and she brought it to her. When she opened it, she saw the child.
Okay, so we know after 3 months, anybody that's ever been around babies or the mothers know that as they grow and get a little older, they probably get a little harder to hide, right? For different various reasons. So it got to the point where she was feared for his life. So what does she do? She puts him in a basket and puts him in the Nile to hide him, right? And amongst the reeds. And I thought it was a very strange coincidence here, which I really don't think it is, but that the very water that was supposed to destroy Moses ended up saving him, right? It's interesting. Interesting thought there, I thought. So, I mean, if the source of destruction was supposed to be this Nile River, why would anybody stop me? Well, I'll go put this baby down in the Nile River and hide him. Seems strange to me. But again, I think we see where God is working things together here in this great, in his plan. So while she does this, here comes Pharaoh's daughter down to the Nile, and this baby's discovered. And she recognizes it as a Hebrew baby. She knows the decree. She's thinking, well, this baby should be killed. If I'm doing my father's will, I'd throw this baby in the river, right? But she doesn't. We see grace working through the heart of Pharaoh's daughter. She had compassion for this baby. She wanted it to live. And she had pity on him, it said in verse 6. So, we see, as we move along here, somebody would like to read verse 7, please. Okay, so his sister, Miriam's watching over these events. She's kind of hiding back, kind of watching over him. She sees Pharaoh's daughter, you know, have pity on this baby. And she just kind of, I just picture, she just shows up all of a sudden and says, well, should I go get somebody to nurse this baby for you? I'll go to the Hebrew women and I'll find somebody. Interesting thought. So, if somebody would like to, read 8 through 10. We'll continue with this, 8 through 10. Okay, so we see his sister asks, should I go get somebody from among the Hebrew women to nurse this child? And Pharaoh's daughter tells her to go ahead and go do that. So she goes and gets Moses' mother. And she said, Mom, you know, I'm sure she goes and tells the story of what's happening. So his mother comes and raises this child, right, for a time being. And I can imagine the difficulty that she had the day that she decided she had to, this child was old enough to live without her, she had to bring it to Pharaoh's daughter and give it up. But we see she was willing to sacrifice a lot for herself so Moses could live, right? Because through giving him up, that was going to give him life. Because his destiny before that was death, to be thrown into the river. So that sacrifice that she made, and I think it's kind of interesting, she probably was grateful for the time she had with him as a baby, because she put him in that river when he was 3 months old and probably had the thought, well, I'll never see him again. But she had this chance to be reunited with him and to help raise him. So I thought it's an interesting way that Moses was saved, I guess, through this. To get past this decree that Pharaoh had made to kill all the baby boys. The very water that was meant to destroy him ends up being what saves him. Because in the timing, I mean, if Moses wouldn't have been there and wouldn't have cried, made some noise when Pharaoh's daughter was down there, who would have found him next? You know, it might have been the person that just chucked him into the river and killed him. I don't think it's coincidence that God put these things in place to make them work. Now, we skip through from verse 10 into 11. Obviously, we're skipping quite a bit of time here. If somebody would like to read verses 11 through 14. 11 through 14, sorry. Okay, so we see where this event here, and before we go much further, let's turn to Acts chapter 7. And we get just a little bit different detail. I guess that's why I thought it was interesting to read this. Acts chapter 7. And this is where Stephen is using the example of Moses and his life as a is a way to defend the gospel here, but Acts chapter 7, if we start in verse 21, let's read through 28, if somebody would like to do that.
And after he had been sent outside, Pharaoh took him away, nurtured him as grown. Moses was educated in all of the things that he did to do, and was a man of power, words, and deeds. But when he was approaching the age of 40, and when he saw one of them being unjustly, he defended him and
Okay, so we see the story here as Stephen is telling it. And a couple things that I pulled out of this in the beginning part there in verse 22. It says, Moses was educated in all the learning of the Egyptians, and he was a man of power in words and deeds. So he was not only raised by Pharaoh's daughter, but he was raised up as an Egyptian would be, I would assume from that. And then in verse 23, he was approaching the age of 40. So this was 40 years after he was born. He was, you know, he's been raised an Egyptian. But obviously, you know, for obvious reasons, physical reasons, appearances, you know, it was obvious to Moses that he wasn't an Egyptian, and he belonged to these Hebrew people. And it wasn't hidden from anybody else either. Obviously, you know, Pharaoh's daughter had, you know, convinced her dad that, you know, I'm going to, you know, this is my son and whatnot and stuff. So, I mean, he had grace with Pharaoh, I'm sure. So it wasn't that it was all of a sudden one day he just like, oh, I'm one of those Hebrew people? You know, he knew that, right? He understood that's where he came from. So, and we see where he goes out and I'm not going to focus on this part too much, but we see where the Egyptian was beating one of the Hebrew people. So Moses in turn kills a guy and hides him, but then it's discovered that they know that it happened, so he feared that he was going to be in trouble. So he decides it's time to probably better get out of this area, right? So let's read in verse 15. 15, please. Okay, so he heads to the land of Midian, and lucky for you guys, I have one of my maps that I'll be pulling up here in a minute, and we'll talk about this region. But the key thing I wanted that struck me about this verse is he sat down by a well, and I thought this sounds like a familiar situation a little bit. So a couple of them I want to look at Genesis 24. When we turn to Genesis, we got to keep your finger in Exodus there. We'll be back there shortly. Genesis 24, somebody would like to read 11 through 14. Okay, so we see this is where Isaac is at the Isaac meets his wife Rebecca at this well, right? They know that people are going to come there, going to water their flocks and their livestock. So the well is probably a place where it's kind of a common place. If we just turn over a couple chapters to Genesis 29. And read verses 1 through 6 of Genesis 29. Okay, so here we see another event. Excuse me, at the well, And this is where Jacob meets Rachel. And we won't go into much detail about that story, but I think it's there's a purpose that Moses went and was sitting by the well. I think Moses was maybe had a desire to meet someone. Possibly. So, and I said, is there something in the water at these wells? You know, because these guys keep hanging out there and they keep coming home with a wife. So it's interesting, I think. Yeah, definitely in the water. So we see, let's read, somebody like to read 16 through 22 of Exodus chapter 2. We'll kind of see where this story continues on. Okay, so we see where Moses is successful in having a wife here. He meets Zipporah, and they're married and have a son. And so and throughout Scripture, there's not a lot of detail about her from this point, you know, about Moses' life with his wife and the history there. But we know that she is from Midian, right? She's from Midian descent. She was one of the daughters of a Midian priest. And so if we just, we saw that in verse 16 there, the first part of 16. If you wanted to keep your finger there again and turn back, and this is where I was talking about knowing some of the descendants and a little bit of the history, I think helps us to understand a little bit more about things. Genesis 25, the first two verses.
Abraham took another wife whose name was Keturah, and she bore him Zimran and Jokshan and Medan and Midian and Ishbak and Shua.
Okay, so we see this is Abraham's second wife. After Sarah had died, Abraham remarried. And this is where the people of Midian come from. They come from Abraham's second wife, and we'll look at the region where they lived. So Moses' wife was a descendant from Abraham through his second wife. Now, if we look if you turn now to the book of Numbers. We're going to see a mention here of a wife of Moses. Numbers chapter 12, verse 1. Okay, so this poses a couple questions possibly here. This is this the same wife, just a different scenario with her, or is it another wife, or is it a second wife? And again, Scripture doesn't give us a lot of detail here, but we do know a couple things that I think is going to help sort it out. And so his first wife is from the Midian people, from the Midian region, and his second wife is a Cushite, or she's from Cush, which is what we would look at as present-day Ethiopia. And again, I hope, this is a little small, I think, but I got a couple red arrows up here. You might be able to see those. In the top arrow, we see in this region right about right where my mouse cursor is there, is the region of Midian. It's right at the top edge of the Red Sea. And the land of Cush is all the way down here to the south. And on the side over here, it's a couple few different notes on it. It's approximately, I just kind of use the little scale there, you know, 600-700 miles geographically different as the crow flies. I mean, that's if you cut straight through the, you know, angle through the Red Sea. So a fair distance apart. I mean, the state of Montana apart probably at least for these two regions. And through Scripture, if we look back through the ancestry, we can see these are different people, and they come from different descendants. Now, Cush was, the people of Cush, or the region of Cush, was descended from Ham, which is Noah's son, right? After the flood, Noah and his family repopulated the earth. So the people of Cush were from his son, Noah's son, Ham, and they were known as the dark-skinned people of Ethiopia, much as similar as we know them today. And if we go back and look at Midian, he was descended from Shem through Abraham's second wife. So we see that they're not only different regions, because as I was studying this, I ran across a couple of commentaries that they were the same lady. Just the word Midianite and the word Cushite were interchangeable words, an interchangeable language. But I didn't agree with that. I think we could see the differences here. We see the geological difference. You know, the Red Sea is a pretty good barrier, too. I mean, you don't just hop from Cush up to Midian. That's not an easy journey by any means. And then we see through the descendants that they're different people. They're from different groups of people. So I think it's clear. I think we can draw the conclusion that it was a different wife. And I know this is a little bit of a side note here, but in Numbers there, and I didn't want to go into this a lot because it was going to head us down a trail we probably didn't need to look at today. But Miriam and Aaron, there was conflict with those with Moses' brother and sister with this wife, and I think it's the classic case, I guess, where you know, Moses, you know, remarries. I'm going to assume that he remarries here, because this is a pretty long time after his first marriage as well. He's an older man here, and they don't like his new wife. You know, it's an interracial marriage, different cultures. They're not getting along with the new wife, so they're having a problem with that. But that's and if it was the same lady that he'd married 40 years earlier, you know, why did they wait till now to bring out the trouble? You know, lots of speculation here, but I think it's pretty safe for us to say that Moses had a second wife at a different time in life there, and I think we can kind of see that through the descendants. But so while I got this map up here, though, I just wanted to point out. So Egypt is here. You can see on the left side of the map, about halfway down there, and then when Moses fled from Pharaoh, he went over here to the land of Midian. And that's where he met his wife, and he started his family. And as the story went on there, I guess. So we've got a few more minutes here. I think we can finish. So now, if we go back to Exodus chapter 2, we see where, remember when Joseph was there and his family came to Egypt, and they were kind of, the red carpet was kind of rolled out for them. They were kind of given the best land and the best things to eat and stuff. And then we saw where the attitude changed. Now, if somebody would like to read Exodus 23, verse 23 of chapter 2. So now this Egyptian king that has been putting oppression on them, he dies. And the sons of Israel, they sighed, it says. It says they sighed because of their bondage. There's a little bit of relief there. Oh, this guy's gone. Maybe this is our chance to kind of get out of this slavery deal, you know. And they cried out, and their cry for help because of their bondage rose up to God. And my very first thought was, why did it take this king dying before they had the thought, maybe we should ask God to help us? You know, they've been, and I don't know. But maybe they saw, you know, the window of opportunity here and thought maybe they better seize the day, kind of, and this was the time to summon God to come help them, possibly. That was, probably shouldn't have been their thought, but maybe that's what it was. But we see that they had a little bit of an attitude, their attitude changes a little bit here, possibly, towards the Egyptians or to the king of Egypt, I guess. So, as we finish this chapter, somebody would like to just read 24 and 25. We'll finish, I guess.
So God heard the groaning, and God remembered his covenant with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. God saw the sons of Israel, and God took notice of them.
Okay, so he heard their groaning. He remembered his covenant with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. He saw the sons of Israel, and God took notice of them. Now, did it actually take them, you know, crying out to him for him to remember? Did he think, oh yeah, I remember, I promised those guys, right? No. What it took, though, is that God wanted them to want him. And the top of this slide says, you tell me that God doesn't want to hear from us. These people were in great slavery. They were oppressed. They were being killed. It was a tough time for them. But until they were ready and wanted his help, he was gonna wait. Right? They were gonna learn, you know, who God was and who the power that he really had. And we see that example over and over and over and over again with the nation of Israel. You would think, how many times does it take for them to realize that, hey, this truly is a real God? But he continues to show them, and he continues to have mercy on them when they come to him. I think that's important for us to know that's the kind of relationship he wants to have for us, with us, the same as he did then. Yeah, he could have easily lifted them out of Egypt at any time and delivered them. Pharaoh and his armies could have been overtaken just like that if he wanted to. But he wanted them to have the desire to do that, and I think he wants that same desire for us. So that kind of brings us to the end of chapter 2. We see Moses come into the picture. We see his life a little bit. And then we're going to move forward from there, I guess, as we go on next week. So, does anybody have any comments or questions today? I know it's just kind of some history stuff. Go ahead, Kirk.
I think one thing you might kind of point out is that when Jethro, you know, is priest of Midian, you know, really well said in Exodus 2, but later it's Jethro.
Okay. Yeah.
And just like Jacob went to his relatives, and Abraham's servant went to his relatives to find Isaac's wife, you know. So Moses didn't just go, I mean, there's a reason he went to Midian. I mean, I don't think it was just a coincidence either. It's like, well,
right.
It's a big coincidence, you know, and stuff like that. And he went to Midian because that's probably was his relatives. And that's down the line, obviously, there's a way back down the tree, but it still were related down the line. But so that's probably why Jethro was a priest of God, because he had come from, you know, there's them influences that Abraham had
right.
on his other sons, and that's probably some reason why Jethro was a priest of Midian, you know, and so it's not that God didn't know what God started the nation of Israel, which, I mean, I'm not saying it wasn't important or anything to set that up and for the God's promise to Abraham through that, but I think it's important for us to understand that God isn't limited by the Old Testament isn't limited to the Israelites, and that you kind of brought up earlier in your suffered deal is that God had the plan for the church all along, and Israel, I mean, that was something God set up, but there was other ways, other people that prior to that, that had knowledge of God and were obedient to it.
Yeah, that's a good, I never thought about that, Kirk. That's a good point, though. That he is very similar to a situation where he goes to his relatives, and I never didn't think about the point though where, you know, the knowledge of God was in that region. You know, you can get that because, you know, he was a priest, and, you know, that influence from Abraham, you know, you could say trickled down maybe, but was present there at that time. That's I like that idea. That's a good thought. And how, and if Moses knew that, or if he was drawn to that somehow, but God put him there obviously for a specific purpose. And it's probably, again, he probably didn't just blindly close his eyes and point to the map and say, I'm going here. You know, there was a reason he went there, and that's a good point, Kirk, the knowledge, or, you know, maybe even the presence, you could say, of God was in that region, and that was not within what you would call the nation of Israel that was in Egypt at that time. So that's a good point. I like that. Kyle, you got something?
So Pharaoh, when you were at the beginning, you talked about he had all the little boys killed and all the girls spared or whatever. Does that make him a feminist?
It might. I don't know. Yeah.
When I was a kid, they had the cartoon, The Prince of Egypt or whatever, and the dramatized stuff of it, Moses' mom put him in a basket and put him in the river and he was in the river and had it, you know, bullets were hitting him and bouncing all over the place and stuff. And we kind of have that. I just kind of always had that picture in my mind, you know, when people talk about she put the baby in the river, well, she didn't, I don't believe she just put the baby in the river and he floated. I think that he was specifically put in the reed so he wouldn't move.
Oh, I think you're probably right. I don't know. It's
Jethro not leaving him access land in between that though too. And I think
right.
After a little while Jethro did go back to his own land.
Right, but he was with them. He was with them post Egypt though.
Yeah.
And four or five chapter is later in the book.
Yeah.
But I didn't really thought about the idea.
Yeah, and maybe that, you know, maybe, you know, we're not quite 100% sure on that yet, but I think, I mean, to me, I think it's a different lady. I mean, I don't hardly see how it could be the same wife, but
That was the other thing I was thinking about was, how old do you think Moses was when he was sent back to Pharaoh's daughter? I mean, I don't know for sure, but I was thinking, I'm just assuming maybe to the point of, you know, being able to, I don't know, 10, 12 years old, when I kind of had envisioned
years.
Was she just going to leave him there? Or was she just going to hide him
Yeah. Because, yeah, his sister was there to kind of watch. But, yeah, I go ahead, Kyle. Yeah, I feel like the same way. She didn't abandon him there. It was a place where she could hide him, you know, possibly. And
but she managed to hide him with her for 3 months.
That's the way I understand it, yeah.
And then she got scared.
Yeah.
Well, and I guess it doesn't say he was winning, but he was winning. It says he was big when he grew. I don't know. And so I don't know, but one thing I was thinking is I don't think he never forgot his that he was Hebrew or whatever, but I don't know. That almost tells me that he was old enough to understand before he was sent back.
Yeah.
He traveled like 10 miles down the river,
right,
or whatever, in the movie, and ended up being right there in that peaceful spot. You know, she's put him there for a reason. Maybe God told her to put him there.
Yeah, possibly.
We don't know that.
Maybe she was full mom. Maybe she really knew that Pharaoh was going to take the kid. I mean, maybe God came to her and told her whatever. You know, maybe it was.
Yeah. Go ahead, Roy.
I like when archaeology or science confirm that the Bible is actually a testimonial of what really happened. Tutankhamun, everybody knows of Tutankhamun, and they bury him in sarcophagi, multiple coffins, right? One of them, at the center, has a different face. Most kings and princes were buried with a likeness on that coffin. But the center one had a name tag, Mose, Tutmose, and the face looked very different. You mentioned a different look, right? And so the archaeologists believe, and it's the same time frame, archaeologists basically saying that Tutmosis, or Moses in the time of Egypt, was a contemporary of Tutankhamun. So they appropriated that Moses' coffin, because he was a prince, adopted prince, a princess, right? So
right.
They made a coffin for him. They built those, that took a long time. And so, well, he walked away from the job. And so they just used his, because Tutankhamun died quick. He was a teenager. And so they were like one coffin short. And they just took off Moses' nameplate and put down Tutankhamun's. So they found that underneath that.
That's interesting.
Yeah, so it's a confirmation. So there's a school of thought or philosophy or belief, or not belief, but theory, that that's probably Moses' coffin.
It was intended for him.
It was intended for him. It would have been one of his sarcophagi, because that's what he was royalty. They would have built
right.
It for him.
Yeah.
And it's 40 years. I didn't put it all together until you mentioned he was a prince of Egypt for 40 years.
Right, and that's why I, when I went to that passage in Acts, or I thought that gives you a little bit different idea.
Yeah.
You know, there was some. Yeah, it wasn't just he wasn't in Egypt for a handful of years. He was a 40-year-old guy before. You know, before things started happening for him.
They would have trained him to use the sword and the chariot and
yeah.
The arrow and all that stuff.
But, yeah.
Yeah.
On the other note, on the age note, Moses would have been about 80 in Numbers 12. So,
right.
Relatively like this before it had died.
It's very possible, yeah.
And he could remarry again,
And, and if he did remarry and stuff, where he met her, because again, we saw the geological separation there, where that they came together, whatnot. I mean, it's pretty foggy, really, I guess, on who this Cushite wife was, I guess. But I just thought it was kind of an interesting thing I noticed when I was looking at his wives. So anyway, anybody got anything else today? Or all right, we'll go on to chapter 3 next week, and starting to see some interesting things unfold for Moses. So thanks for the comments.